It's like springtime here. I don't know how it is for you guys, but it went from snow and ice and cold and wet and gross to now it's 60 and sunny all week long. It's awesome.
And muddy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course it's muddy.
Yeah,
it's like...
You can't even step off your driveway. Your foot will sink into the ground.
Yeah. And our backyard is being torn up right now for projects. And so our dogs want to go out into the fenced-in backyard. Every single time they go outside, they come back and it's like, we got to wipe off the bottom of the dock and wipe off the feet and dig out the mud. And yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it got to 40 here yesterday, which feels like it might as well be 80. It's so nice compared to 10, yeah. Yeah. 12, what it's been. It was really nice yesterday. So I did a bunch of stuff around here. A tree had blown over. I sent you guys the video from the security camera of the tree blowing over. In the summer of 22, we had a really bad drought up here in upstate New York, and it didn't rain for like 6 weeks. Several of my trees on that property died, which is really sad. So at this point, I've been here for 20 years, and once I cut down these three trees, it'll be about 8 big, giant trees, which really define the personality of this property when I first bought it. About 8 big trees will have had to be cut down, like 100-year-old trees. And I have to cut 2 more. The ones you guys saw fall the other day was one of those trees. And so I cut that up yesterday with this weather. Me and Mike cut that up, and I cut it into 10-foot sections. I was able to get 4 10-foot sections out of what fell on the ground. And there's still another piece standing that's about 20 feet tall, which I'm not ready to cut down yet because it defines a fence line on the property. And
that's crazy. That's a lot.
Yeah, 40 feet worth of tree fell down. And the tree broke about 15 feet high from the ground. So the wind broke it at about 50. So as like I said, I still have a 15-foot stump to cut down. And if it had fallen from the bottom of the tree where it hits the ground, it would have smashed my whole porch. But because it fell there, the juxtaposition, the tip just clipped the house and didn't damage anything, just to some branches on the roof. So I got very lucky. So I have to cut these other two down because they're certainly as tall enough to hit the house only a few feet away. Long story, I'm cutting those segments into what I like to think are going to be porch poles. So I'm going to cut them into squares on the sawmill and then turn them into porch poles on my long. I have a long lathe, which I haven't really shown off that much. When I first got it about 5 years ago, I have a 12-foot long wood lathe. So I'm going to make porch poles. That's one of the videos for this coming year, is I'm going to make 10 porch poles for the back of my house.
The thought of that, of turning something that long, that big, 4 times, sounds absolutely terrible to me.
9 times.
How? 9? Wait, what?
I only got 4 out of this tree.
Wow, that's even worse.
And when I cut the other trees down, I'm going to cut those up as well. I'll certainly have enough by the time those two trees are really tall.
Repeat how big you said the lathe was.
It's a 12-foot long lathe, and I need 9-foot poles, so there's enough between centers to be able to spin.
Where is this thing?
We use it on the TV show. Paul and Pat were always on it, but they only use the short end that's on camera. But the lathe bed is 12 feet long. It's like a 1900, maybe 1910 blunt pattern maker's lathe that I bought on Facebook Market for. I paid like $800 for it, but I bought it because it's so long. Because I bought it to make porch poles. Now here it is this many years later, and I finally have the means to cut the trees and mill them up and start from scratch versus having to go to a sawmill or a lumber mill and get it. So I'll be able to, from the farm to the table. That's what this video will be about.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So that's nice feeling spring. We're going to be in March in a couple of days. So that's it. March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb. And then it's going to be my birthday in April. Whenever it's my birthday, I know the spring is here.
I celebrate your birthday every day.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
Wait,
you.
What?
Every day is April 3rd.
Huh. That's funny.
Tax is coming up.
That's pretty terrible. Well, yeah, the idea of turning that much of anything, actually, the idea of turning much of anything, it's pretty terrible to me, but that sounds exhausting. I mean, it sounds like that. How long would that even take you? Just one. You have 9 of them to do, but how long from raw squared off lumber to a usable piece
that's, I'd say,
9 feet long?
About an hour. I'd say like about 2 hours, but not perfect. But I could rough it out by, have you ever seen how they have the fingers that sit on the lathe? And when you get to the right diameter, the finger falls. So I was going to do that. So I was going to take a factory mentality, like when we watch all these factory videos online where you see people in Asia repeatedly making cuts, or in India making cuts and doing stuff. I'm going to take that mentality and set up a jig so that when I get to each key point on the diameter, that finger will fall, and then you just connect them. And so, they won't be precisely the same if you were able to put a caliper from one to one, but if you step back and they're all 5-7 feet apart and you look at them, they're going to look fine.
So this is maybe a dangerous, dumb question, but is there, at that scale, is there a better cutting tool or more, like, could you use a chainsaw as the cutting tool or something like that to move along to remove that amount of material faster?
It's not a bad question. Yeah, it's not a bad question, because years ago, I developed this idea. I started developing this idea and I abandoned it because it wasn't working so cleanly for me, with a angle grinder, and then it would follow a pattern and the angle grinder would cut the wood spinning. And I figured, oh, you just put a key pattern, like kind of like a player piano. You just put that thing along it and then it rides on it, just like making a duplicating machine for an accent. And that might still be something that I do. I abandoned that idea because it wasn't working cleanly and I slept on it. And then somebody else did it. And I think they used a circular saw, which I think spun a little faster and had a little bit more of an aggressive blade on it. So it worked for him. So somebody somewhere in Eastern Europe made the exact same jig that I thought of, but he had success with it. So now I know that it would work with the right speed and feed. So, I mean, I could even do something like that. But the poles will be cut to 6x6s, and then the pattern will be out of that 6x6, like 2 feet up, 2 feet down. So the pattern is only about 7 feet that gets cut, maybe even less, that gets cut into the pattern. So when you start really reducing it and dragging it down to its basics, what you really need, it's not so bad. The only problem is, and I know everyone's going to send me an email on this, is they're going to be solid chunks of wood, which we'll check. And they're going to get lines and cracks and stuff, which is something I'm totally okay with. As long as it's stable and suitable, I'll leave it. If I have to change one out, I'll change one out.
With having the sawmill and that being a potential issue with everything that you use the sawmill for from now on, do you think like a kiln is in your future?
Rob Isaacs Research is a company that sells the drying mechanism that gets hooked on, almost like an air conditioner, but like a more complicated air conditioner, that would get hooked onto a shipping container. And it would cook the air in there to the right temperature. And you put vents and stuff on a shipping container. And I have two shipping containers. So Rob's like, let's take one and turn it into a kiln. And he reached out to the company, and we're going to talk about getting free stuff. They weren't 100% on board, but I'm also not opposed to buying one. But at this point, I don't want to jump too fast because I'm not really set up for it.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then I got the sawmill going into the winter, so I haven't really had a chance to really, really exploit it. Yesterday, we moved all those logs over to the sawmill, which was like an hour-long production, getting them on the trailer. I filmed all of it, so we'll see it. But at the end of the day, this summer, hopefully, I'll be able to get more production. And this is the other annoying thing, having two locations, which is always a pain. And your good set of drills are always somewhere else. They're always, you left them at the house, you left them at the shop, and you're at the house. And in this case, I bought a brand new tractor. Now, the tractor is down the block, and we had to move these logs, so I used my truck to drag them around the yard. If we had the tractor, I could have just picked those. So I said to Mike, now I need two tractors, because the sawmill is down the block. The sawmill's 2 miles away.
Yeah.
And every time we need the tractor, we got to hop in the tractor and take like 45 minutes and drive it at 3 miles an hour, 2.5 miles. So I gotta get another tractor. Maybe I'll get another free one. Maybe I get a free tractor.
Can you trailer the tractor?
It's a little heavy. It's possible, but I haven't tried it yet. It might be just a little heavy. My trailer is supposed to carry 7,000 pounds, so I could probably do it. I just haven't had the thought to do it yet, because I'm usually trailering like material at the same time as when I need the tractor, so at least the last couple circumstances.
Okay, I got it. I got an idea for you. This is a good one. Ready? Okay, so you have those long pieces of tree. So instead of turning them into porch poles, you turn them into helicopter blades. And then you build a working helicopter mechanism on top of your tractor. So if you need it between the two locations, you can just fly it over and set it down.
See, that was like living life of a cartoon character.
Man, that sounds like something Colin Furze would be like, oh, yeah, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, and it can shoot fire, too.
I built a tunnel. Now I'm going to build the opposite of a tunnel.
Yeah, right.
I'll send you guys pictures of it.
That's cool. Any work on the car or the house or
the house? I'm still waiting for the weather to break. I'll show you pictures of sending you guys pictures, which is really good for camera. The car is coming out pretty cool, and then I got all the flooring ready for the house. So I sent you guys pictures of the car that I posted on Instagram the other day, so people can see the same pictures. And then the house, you could see 14 foot long, 6x8s that are going to make up the new floor in the main section of the house, right where the pile is, right inside that door. There's no floor.
Oh yeah, that's crazy looking.
Yes. But the car is coming along. I'm really excited about the car. It's one of these projects where I want to rush to the shop and do something on it every day. I got the roof in, and then the roof defines the curve from the windshield all the way to the back. And now I woke up this morning with visions of the next step. Remember I said each step keeps designing the next step? I said a couple weeks ago. I woke up this morning with, should I make the floor metal with like a certain interesting kind of metal I have in stock? Don't have a texture on it. It's like I have a shiny, bright aluminum decking. Steel decking with the hash patterns I could see on a fire truck step.
Like a diamond plate kind of?
That's it. That's the word I couldn't think of. Yeah. And so I have two sheets of that, which could become the whole interior of the car, which might look cool because it's a juxtaposition of that texture versus the wood. So I'm thinking that through. And then I have these bead rollers. I could make interior door panels with the bead roller and then have wood on the outside with steel hinges. So I'm thinking this is all, these are visions I haven't had up until now. And it's because I got the roof done. Now my mind is like, okay, what's the next connectivity? What's the connective step? I got to do the roof, the floor, and then everything in between.
Have you thought about interior stuff at all yet on this? Or are you keeping it really raw?
I'm going to keep the cab itself just like it was, the interior of the, just to maintain the look of the cab. Oh, I'll tell you guys another funny story. Keep the interior the same, but going back, I'm going to keep it rustic, but I do want it to look purposeful. It's not going to be like drippy glue and stuff like that.
Because I could see, drippy glue. I could see, you don't need these, but like the door, the cards, the internal part of the door, you know, that card, like that type of stuff being leather with all sorts of like sewn details and stuff in it like that.
I took the seat out. Yeah, definitely. Somebody was talking about that to me. Yeah, definitely. I took the main seat out because it was like a big giant couch full of mouse poop. So they took the couch out, which is the main front seat. So I'll make two buckets. I got to find some cool buckets in the junkyard and come up with something cool. Maybe make covers for that. So this is the update. This is the big update on the Cadillac. And then I'll stop talking. But I found a car on Facebook Market. It's a 19...
What? No, what? You found a car?
A 46 Cadillac. It's in Amsterdam, which is about 40 miles from here. A 1946 Cadillac Fleetwood, which is everything we need. A brand new front grille. Well, new to this car, not rusty. New front grille, front bumpers, back bumpers, which is both we need. Headlight bezels, which I need. A full complete engine, which is what we need. Rear fenders, which is what I need. So it has all these, and then some serious engine parts, which are impossible to find, like the air cleaner and the radiator and the connectivity. So the whole entire car, $2,000. Robzik, it's a really good car on its own. Do you really want to cannibalize it? I was like, yes, no one's ever going to restore this car. It's a beautiful 46 Cadillac four-door, but the windshields are smashed and it was sitting. But this is the crazy thing, and I'm going to talk about it in the next episode. So we meet the guy. Happens to be very nice. Usually when you meet these people on Facebook Market, they're horrible. But this kid, Anthony, is a really nice kid, and it's him and his dad. It's all their collection. And I said, oh, we're fixing this car up, and I showed him the car. And he immediately goes, oh, I know that car. I saw that video the other day. I saw the guys fixing that up. I go, we are that guy. We are those guys. He goes, you're the guys that were in that video? I'm like, yeah, it was only me and him fixing this car. He goes, oh, that's cool. I watched the whole video. Like, he absolutely did not recognize me or Rob. Like, and it doesn't know us, and it doesn't know our channel, know my channel. But he said, you know what's cool about that car? He goes, you don't know this? Maybe you do know. He goes, that's from an auction from 2020 where a guy sold 230 cars. A family member died, and the family sold 230 junky Cadillacs and old cars from the 50s and 40s. And your car was in that auction. And this car you're buying from me was also in that auction. So these cars, they're like long lost twins that are back together again.
They are two of 200 and how many ever brothers?
230. So he said, he goes, do you know someone? He mentioned the channel. I'm like, I'm not familiar with the channel. He said, oh yeah, he did a walkthrough at the auction in 2020. I'll send you the video. So I have the video of the walkthrough of this crazy auction. So I'll pull clips of it and show it on when I do the video episode 2. In the thing, the guys walk by my car quickly and they go, oh, look at that, man. We could put an aluminum bed on that and make that a truck. And then you just see it in the background and they walk by it.
Crazy.
This car. And the guy I bought the car from, he said, what do you know about it? He goes, I bought it at an auction. I don't know anything about it. I bought a bunch of cars at an auction and came along with it. That's the most he told me. But then when I met this kid told me a little bit more about the circumstances of it. So yeah, everything comes back together.
That's pretty wild.
That's a cool story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So that's the story. I'll take
awesome.
A break. I'll let my ears do the talking.
What have you been up to, David?
We haven't started filming any new projects yet this week, but I think we're gonna attempt something tomorrow. But I just got back from a little 3-day riding retreat by myself. No wiener dogs, no people.
Wow.
And it was... I went in there with like loose goals. I'm like, if I don't come up with any good ideas or anything, I'll be okay with it. It's about just getting away and trying. And I had a couple loose script ideas that I wanted to work on. And then one of them is, I'm not going to give away the exact video just yet, but basically it was like 10 creative hacks. I'm like, all right, I'll think of like 10 creative hacks and I'll borrow from some of the books I've read, David Lynch and Rick Rubin, and I'll put those in there. And as I'm coming up, and I have like 20 of them, so I'm going to do like 10 creative hacks, but with like 10 bonus ones. And then I thought each one of these could be a video on its own. So then it's turned into this whole video series I'm going to do.
Cool.
So I'm going to do a video of like 10 creative hacks.
A creative hack in the way that, as an artist, you need to get through a blockage or to develop what do you mean by a creative hack?
Let me pull up my list because my memory is absolutely terrible. Looking for it. I am actually having trouble finding it. So. Basic, like one of them would be like taking a past failure and remixing it, which I have one of those. That's the bass that I just did. There is a, let's see. It's like giving yourself like an insanely absurd rule to use for the day, whether that rule is no straight lines or only curves or something along those lines. And so I have 20 of these. And so the first video is going to be, here's the 10 things to make you more creative, especially if you're not a creative person. Use these 10 things. And one of the David Lynch one was, you know, destroy your project halfway through. And then you then build upon that destruction to lead you in a different area. So there are things like that. And so the first video is going to be the 10 things. And then the next 10 videos will be putting each one of those ideas into use. And I didn't realize that when I started it, it was going to be a whole video series. It was just going to be one video, kind of like a talking head video, and maybe show some examples that I've done. But now it's going to turn into a whole series. And it's the moment I'm like, oh, this is I want to do this as a series. I just started coming up with more ideas and it kind of snowballed and I got really excited. It's like when you, you woke up this morning and you were excited about the next part of the car. I had that aha.
Yeah,
this
is great.
Going to be a really cool series.
That's something to strive for. Is when you're as a creative, when you have that, the next day you wake up, you want to go run to it.
Yeah, that's
jump into those, it.
Especially if since I've had a couple projects recently where I'm like, I just want to get it done. I just want to move on to the next thing. You know, the excitement of the project is over. So having that that thrill is always great as a creator. So I worked on that, and I realized that 3 days is not enough, because you go in the first day, you get there in the evening, you get food, you settle in, and you're not going to do any work. And then the next day it was like, wake up, do all the work. And then the third day you leave. So I'm like, next year, if I do this again, there's going to be 2 days of writing, because I didn't feel like it was enough. But I'm not sure why I have balloons in my video.
Wow.
Why did that happen?
You put your finger, you did two. Oh, I don't want to do it because I don't want balloons, but you did.
that's embarrassing.
That was super weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just had
anybody who is not watching, all of a sudden, randomly on his video, balloons popped up and started flying across his screen.
It was like a congratulations on your idea. Anyway, it was really good, and I'm glad that I got away for a few days just to write and come up with some ideas. I think it would be fun to do like the three of us, we get away and no video shooting, just kind of helping each other come up with ideas or something along those lines. And then maybe we record a 500 episode podcast or something.
Let's just shoot for 600.
Are we really close to 500? Is that soon?
We're like 20-some-odd. Okay. This is episode 473. But I was just joking about us putting everything off. That's all.
That's what we do. We've had so many great ideas. The Christmas cards, the meetups, the
tour. It's all going to happen. It's all going to happen at 500.
Remember the tour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The tour could still happen.
We could do it all at once. Anything that we've ever said that we're going to do, we're going to do it all at once.
Everybody shows up to the tour and we record episode 500 and 600 back to back and then hand out cards and posters as they leave. We're done. We did it all. Finally.
We did it all. Yeah.
So, Jimmy, if the three of us were to go somewhere for, let's say there's 2 days of creative time. So you got a travel in day, you got 2 days of the three of us somewhere, and then we leave. Do you think you could manage to be not idle, but like still? And this is not, I'm not joking with you. Like, is something like that, like, even,
I could
does
switch
that sound
down.
Interesting
I could totally,
to you?
Yeah, I could totally wind down. I could totally do that. I've done it here. I mean, I don't show everybody. I only show everybody when I'm moving around. I don't show anybody when I'm static. That's not fun on Instagram.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I mean, I just feel like you're somebody who's just constant, like you've got the ideas and the motion to just constantly be creating. And it feels like being forced to go sit somewhere out of your element and talk or think, you know, like without being able to like do action as well.
No,
it seems like that would be hard for you.
I know that it's important to wind down. And I talked about it, how more in the summer, where I chill with the birds and the cats and stuff, I do take blocks of time where I'll just sit in the grass with the cats and just have downtime. I certainly do that. It is really important. I go for long drives up here. It's fun because you could drive in upstate New York forever and find something cool every time you go for a drive, some interesting old town. So I do take times to do that. And if we were going to do that, I would treat that as one of those moments in time.
So I would think of it as like, you know, we get somewhere and then the next day we go into our separate rooms. And we're going to meet for dinner. And then at dinner time, we can discuss what ideas, projects that we've kind of come up with. But then what I really miss about working at the ad agency is that brainstorming, that when you can bounce ideas off of somebody else. And so, you know, at dinner, we can share what we're thinking about and then have the perspective of somebody completely different chime in and like, and you know, that's when the ideas really, really start to snowball. And then I love going to thrift stores and antique stores. So I would like you know, maybe a day out of just going and gathering inspiration.
Yeah. So we have to find a place that has solitude and cool stuff to go see.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's cool stuff everywhere. You just
That's a good point. Well, cool. The video series sounds interesting. That sounds like a... Do you think those would all be... Like, would you strongly tie them together to that initial list? Or is that more of just like you have kind of an impetus for videos that you would use to create videos? And
I think I would strongly tie it together to the list. So the videos can kind of play off of each other. And, you know, I can... It also kind of allows me to do some really crazy, absurd things, but have a reason to do it, to show why I would make something that's supposed to be functional, non-functional, or the opposite, you know? So I think as a series, it would help with views, because some of these ideas are pretty absurd. And so, but if it's tied to a series, maybe somebody sees one video and I'm like, oh, that was cool. What other ideas does this dude have? I'll check that out. And maybe they snowball off of each other. Maybe they don't. I don't know. But it's what I'm excited about right now.
Awesome. Cool. Well, let's see. For me, I'm not ready to talk about the project yet, but I yesterday ran into a really interesting thing. Like, let me figure out how to say this.
Person, so, place, no thing.
This is a thing. It's an idea. So I'll speak for myself. When I come up with ideas for projects, there's usually some little piece in it that I don't know how to do yet, right? There's something that I have to design, that I have to figure out how it works. I have to, you know, whatever. But those things feel like they're all usually derivative of something else that I've seen, something I've done. I have a context for, yeah, I can figure that out. I'll get to the minutia of how it actually works in the process. And I'm not usually, I don't get stumped by those things a lot. And I think that's because I don't get challenged enough to figure something out that I don't have a context for. I don't know if that is too general.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, started working on this little project, and it was one of those, I'll make a hinge. I'll make my own little hinge thing for this, and it has to have this, and it has to do this, but it can't do this. Like, it's no big deal. I'll figure the hinge out. And then I started actually going into Fusion and trying to design the hinge, and I got stumped. I got stumped by how I would even go about drawing this thing in Fusion. I got stumped about geometry in my head. Like, am I thinking about this in a way that is realistic? And it was the first time in as long as I can remember that I sat here at the desk with my head in my hands, just thinking about, like, how do you do this? Like, where do I even start? And it's not that complicated. It's actually really funny that it's not that complicated. But I could not, for anything, figure out where to start and how to do this little simple thing. And so I went and I couldn't figure out the words to search to figure out how other people would do it. Or, you know, I just didn't have anything to start with. And so I spent a long time sitting here just racking my brain, and it felt good. It was frustrating, but it felt really good to just be like, I don't know. I don't know where to start. I don't know what exactly I'm going for. I'm probably simplifying what I'm going for in my head, which means I can't search for the right thing to actually make it happen. Anyway, ended up finding a little bit of reference for somebody else doing something that's similar, but it gave me the little, like, oh, got it. Okay. And then I started working on this thing. But getting to the final result was cool, and I'm still working on it, so it's not really done. But just, I don't know. There was something new, something abnormal, and something really fun about being lost for a minute, about just like, I don't know what to do here. And then getting frustrated about that a little bit, and then all of a sudden having one of those aha moments. And maybe that's it. Maybe I don't make the opportunity to have a whole lot of real deep aha moments when it comes to designing things. Like, maybe I'm not pushing myself far enough. Maybe I'm not trying things outside of my skill set often enough. I don't really know. But anyway, yesterday was interesting for that because I just haven't had that kind of block for a long time. The other thing that's kind of new recently is in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, I've had, for the first time in a long time, a certain amount of stress about making videos. I've, you know, in the last year or so, I've slowed everything down. I've done things that are just like immediately interesting and useful, and there's been a lot less stress to it and a lot more kind of free flow. And in the last couple of days, I've got a couple of videos coming up that are going to take just a lot of time to do. So there's just a lot of built-in time. I'm also shooting course stuff, and it's behind schedule, but I'm still trying to get it done. There are sponsors attached to these videos that can't slide because I also have sponsors next month that I have to, like, you know, there's stuff starting to stack up, and it's not a big deal. Like, everything's fine. I'm not really that stressed about it. But it was the first time in a while I kind of looked at all of the things coming up and get all this done. Like, I haven't had that in a while. Mm-hmm. I really like not having that feeling. And it's just a season right now where I'm trying to do a lot of things. But then, you know, there's also a bunch of other stuff that I want to do. I want to continue next versions of a few ideas. I'm working on some writing and all of this stuff that I'm intentionally pushing it down the road a little bit. Like, I just can't fit it all in right now. That's all right. But I am up against a few things that have to be done right now and in the next month. I think that, you know, was kind of a new thing for me to feel again. I used to be under the gun, felt like I was under the gun all the time, and I hated it. And so I haven't been back under the gun in a little while. Still not a big fan, but that's where I'm at. But, so I'm working on this, this little
secret.
It's not a secret, but it's just not really that interesting until I have something to show for it. Okay. So it's a little mechanism. So I've got that. And then I'm working on a piece of furniture for the end of the month and been shooting more course stuff that's moving along pretty well. And it was interesting yesterday too, because this thing that I could not figure out how to do, I figured it out in Fusion. And my first thought was like, oh, I can add that to the course, because I had like a legit aha moment that I can translate into the course. I just got to figure out where to go back and stick it. So that was kind of cool, you know, be able to share that stuff with other people. Well, another little thing that I maybe this is a tip or something that I realized I was doing without realizing it. I realized after the fact that I had been doing it for a while. Somebody asked me about it. So I've been 3D printing a bunch of prototypes for different things and videos for a while. And I intentionally started swapping filament colors in between my tests so that version one was orange or whatever. Version two is black. Version three is blue. And I did that to show progression, but I didn't really think about it. I mean, it was just like, well, I'll be able to keep track of which one's which if they're different colors, and swapping filaments, no big deal. So I did that. Somebody asked me about it recently, and they were like, is that how you keep track of your iterations, by doing different color combinations? And I was like, well, it's mostly for the video, but I guess it is. And then I looked at my desk where I had a bunch of different prototyped pieces, and they were in color batches. I'm like, oh. So the tip is to people, make sure that you are swapping filament colors from part to part and from iteration to iteration so that you can keep track visually of what is what and which version is which version. And, you know, it kind of helps you give a progression, because I'm looking at this stuff I was working on yesterday here on my desk, and it's all in different colors. And I remember yesterday swapping colors to make sure that I knew which version I was making. So anyway, just a little tip. Other than that, got some cruiser news, but we'll save that for the after show. Like, legit news. So that's kind of cool. We did have a topic, though.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the glory and the guts and the glory of getting free tools a little bit, because we all have experiences with getting free tools. And at this stage of the game, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Sometimes You just go out and buy it. Occasionally, I go out and buy tools. I do that more often than not. And somebody will always send me a message and be like, hey, they follow you. You should have sent the message. And sometimes I realize it's just a lot easier to go and buy a tool for hundreds, $10, $20, $30, $40, $100, $200, $4,000, $3,000. It's easier to buy that tool than to have a communication with a company. And I said, remember when we first started, we would do anything to get anything free. Because not only do you get free tools, which is obviously cool, but more than anything, it's the acknowledgement of the company. It's the acknowledgement that wow, somebody believes in me. And that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. I remember the very first real video that I got paid for was this oil, this like pre-mixed oil. I can't remember what it's called. True Fuel. It was like the first video I got paid for. And that was exciting. It was like the first time somebody acknowledged what I was doing was like worthy, had value. So that's exciting. So in the evolution of a young influencer, it's really important to have those moments. But the older you get, or the more you stick around long enough, you're able to afford some things. You're able to make a little bit more money. Sometimes I choose my battles. Now, when anybody comes at me, I have this guy, I'll tell you a little bit, and he might be listening. It's fine if he's listening, because I'm not going to say anything disparaging, because I already said it to him in the email.
What?
No, it's just, I have a guy that says, I have companies for you. I said, okay. And it sounds like it could be leading up to him giving me a link saying, click this link for an appointment, which I'll never do. Never send me, even if you're my closest friend or my brother or my sister, never send me a link because it won't get clicked on. I'll just go, that looks cool. I'll never click on the link. I won't even know what it is, but you'll think I saw it and I won't see it. I'd never click on any links ever. And if it's really important, I'll say, send me a screen grab. My phone's not working. And then you'll know that I did not click on the link. I need a screen grab.
I need a screen grab. My phone's not working.
It worked. And so this gentleman says, send me your analytics. So I just said, 2 million followers, 400 million views, Instagram, 240,000. That's my analytics. Oh, he said, send me your deck. And I sent him those three lines. I go, that's my deck. And he's like, you don't have a deck. I go, I have no deck. There's no deck. This isn't advertising agency in the 1980s. I don't have a deck. I go, you can go look at my analytics if you want. And then the other day, he's like, send me some screen grabs so I can better focus who I'm going to shop you to. And I flat out said, I go, send them my channel. If they like me, they like me. If they don't, they don't. That is the chemistry behind this type of marketing.
There's my work speaks for itself.
I said, my work speaks for itself. I said, either they have passion for what I do or they don't. What am I going to say? I have this many more Russian followers than South America. I go, none of that matters. I go, it's a human thing. It's a human touch. If they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. I said, I'm sorry I'm being blunt. I said, but that's it. I'm not going to deep dive. I go, what are the analytics going to show? That this company is going to give me a free screwdriver because I have this many more followers in Brazil? I was like, it's ridiculous. So there you go. So the overall point I'm making is either there's chemistry with a brand or there's not. And sometimes I get stuff, some companies just send stuff and you get it and you're like, oh, cool, thanks. They never even send you a conversation or anything. And you get a box of stuff and you're like, oh, that was such a nice gesture. Let me talk about them. But then when you get in the weeds with some other companies and like, we need this many posts, we need that many thing. And then I hear that sort of horror story with other people. And then if they have a decent product, I just go buy it. And this way I have no obligation to say anything about it. I use it. It's in the background. If I feel like it, I'll cover the logo. But sometimes the opposite end of getting free product is getting really complicated, expensive free product. And they give you no support because you didn't pay for it. So you're on the low end of the totem pole and the entire giant company doesn't know who you are when you call in and you can't get the machine to work and then you get no support from them. So that's the other end of the spectrum. I told you guys some behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, you're speaking like that happened to you.
Yeah, it did. It is happening to me, which is why I'm a little frustrated about it. But oh, I also told this gentleman who I said, by the way, I go, I have an agent and I've talked to every brand. I've had little tiny, if not bigger deals with every brand out there one way or another. I said, so I'm not brand new to anybody you're going to approach in my estimation. I said, but I will only take deals that last 1 or 2 years. That's another thing at the evolution of our careers is that I don't want to do one video for a tool brand because tools are the things that stick around. I'll do one video for an insurance company or some sort of service or like BetterHelp. I'll do 1 or 2 videos for them. But if it's something that's like a workshop thing, I want to develop a relationship because if I do one video, it's something that sticks around. It lingers in our community. So people, for instance, I did a couple of things for DeWalt and everybody thinks I still have a relationship with DeWalt. I haven't talked to anybody at DeWalt in 7 or 8 years. But that's what happens when you do one branded thing for somebody. So if somebody does approach me with a one video for a tool, I most often say no. I mean, there are numbers they could say which would get me excited, but
But the payment side of thing, that adds a whole nother dimension to it than, you know, just getting a free thing. I mean, I know all of us, probably a lot of people, even with very, very new small channels, will get these emails. As soon as you get your email circulated, you will start getting emails for like, hey, here's our free blank, just insert random object. If you'll do a review on it, then you can have the thing. And I mean, I get them daily, every morning.
I read a couple of them last week.
It's like, you know, smart blinds or LED flashlights or bird feeders with a camera in it. It's just like these random things, you know, lip gloss, like all this random stuff. And they're just shooting out because it's cheaper for them to give out.
Forward me the lip gloss one.
I did. I sent it to you. I sent you a screen grab of it. But it's cheaper for them to send out like a free tube of lip gloss than it is to actually look for somebody that it would make sense to pay to really promote it, you know, because it's just how it works. It's just, there are so many creators. It is so free for somebody to create a piece of content to put out there in a lot of cases that, you know, it's just easier for them to kind of shotgun blast these emails. Now, even when you get into the more specific tool brands where they're not trying to send out like a $5 thing, they're sending out a $1,000 machine or whatever. You still look at that and you go, yeah, it's a $1,000 machine. It's a $1,000 retail machine. Their cost on that machine is probably $200 or something. So it's still a different thing, but it makes more sense for them to find somebody that, yeah, we want to send this specific person this machine because we know that it will get shown to the people who actually would buy it, not sending me lip gloss because nobody watching me is going to buy lip gloss because I used it. I don't even know how you use a lip gloss.
I can show.
So anyway, but the whole free tool thing, I think what we were kind of talking about beforehand is that I think there's a lot of pitfalls to it that are not as obvious. I was telling the two of you beforehand, I'm working with a company right now to get a free tool, and it is a very, very expensive free tool. And it's also a tool that is new to the market. Nobody has seen it yet. I'm excited about getting this free tool because it's going to, I think, make working on the Gia faster and more exciting. And I think will give me an impetus to like push that thing along. And part of that is even that this company is asking me to commit to using this thing in 4 videos over several months. And in my mind, I'm like, well, that I don't want to be locked into that. But then I'm like, actually, that would be really good to have something external to lock me into 4 videos of working on the car over the next several months. That's a weird tension that I could put on myself, but I don't. But if I sign a contract saying I'm going to do that, cool. Now I get to justify that time to work on the car for me. So that's part of that. But anyway, we were talking beforehand and the contract that this company sent, it's just like their blanket first contract. We're going to send you this machine. You do these types of things. And here's all the verbiage. This is a very popular company that I know a lot of people have signed this same contract because they get a free machine. they get a free thing that seems like they will use it. And but we started reading through this contract, and I had my agent look at it, and he came back with a ridiculous number of things to change. And most of it was about using my likeness, having like perpetual use of my likeness. So he was like, don't sign this unless you just want to find yourself on a cutout in Lowe's at some point and get nothing for it.
Whoa.
There's a really open-ended bunch of statements in it. And so he modified the contract, sent back a bunch of stuff. They were cool with it. Like, we changed it. It was not a big deal at all. I'm excited about working with them, and I think it's good. But that, I think, is should be an example to people that when you get a free thing, truly nothing is free. So when you get a free thing and you just sign a contract that you're not really willing to read through and really think through all the way because you get the free thing, you may not be aware of what you're giving away. Now, that may not matter. Nobody may ever use my likeness, put me on a thing, use me in an ad without my permission in that case. But they could, legally, because you signed the paper, you know? So there's a potential hidden cost in taking a free thing from that perspective. But then there's also just the, like you started to say, Jimmy, the commitment and the expectation between you and the company has to be really, really clear about what they are expecting mm-hmm. to get back for giving you that free thing. Because otherwise, if you don't meet their expectation because you didn't know about it, maybe, then they start badgering you mm-hmm. and they can bring legal action against you, especially if you signed a contract.
Yeah. I've never had that circumstance, by the way.
But I haven't either. Yeah. I haven't either. But it is like a legal possibility, you know? I have had companies who kind of expected performance of videos to be better than they actually were, even though mm-hmm. we never agreed on a performance like yeah. benchmark. And they've come back and said like, oh, well, you should really do a make good. That's what they call it. Like, do a make good post.
Yeah. I remember having that conversation with Mark a couple of times, and I was like, I'm not going to guarantee the views on anything.
Yeah.
I said, if that gets down to it, I said, we just don't have to do a deal with them.
Did have something maybe a year ago where, Jimmy and I share an agent, Mark, and they're like, they want this many views. And I was like, what happens if we don't get this many views? And you're like, we just do another video. And I was like, I'll take it. And that's the only time I've ever done it. And luckily, I hit that view
count.
Truth
be told, I did the same thing.
Yeah, okay.
It might have been the same client. I don't remember who it was.
I don't remember who it was either.
They just said if
remember.
It was a trigger. So it's like, if you get the money up front, I was like, okay, I'll take the money. If it doesn't hit the goal, I can't guarantee it will or it won't. So I still got the pay, but if it didn't hit the goal, I just mentioned them again in another video.
Yeah.
So I think that's what happened. That was the only time I ever did that, because it was an easy version of that versus like, you don't get paid this much. You get,
this
performance things. I was like, So basically like, there's a chance you might have to do two mentions versus one for the same money. And it's really no skin off your back when you look at the product, if it's something that's suitable. I can't honestly remember what it was.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that does come down to, like, if it's worth it. I mean, I've had things where I've done, like, Instagram posts and things when there weren't enough views. But that's only because my agent would come back and say, like, this thing didn't perform as well. Do you think you would want to kind of throw them a bone and do an Instagram thing to kind of make up for it? And I've done that in a couple of cases when it's a company that I want to continue to work with. And if I leave them hanging a little bit, we have no future. If they see that I'm willing to like do a little bit of extra to keep the relationship there, then it's better long term, you know. But as far as the free thing, just getting free material, when there's no money involved, it's a really different beast. Like I don't take free tools very often if that's all it is, because I know that the expectation is probably a little lopsided. And I have kids I have to feed, and I can't feed people with like a machine that I can use in one video. You know what I mean? So I don't do that often. When I do, it's like the Thunder Laser. I don't know if this is like uncouth to say, but like they gave me that machine, and it's a ridiculously expensive machine. And I did that because I researched it, seemed like a really good laser. I was looking for a new laser. It was one that I would never spend that amount of money on to buy. And I'm like, well, I mean, this is my chance to get that machine and have it forever. And as long as the expectation from their end is not out of question, and it really wasn't, it was totally reasonable. So I did that, and I love that thing, and I will, that's my laser. Like, I don't have any interest in finding another laser from another company. Like, it's awesome. So it's like when the value of the thing for me is so high that I just would never justify spending that money myself, as long as the expectation from their end is not out of reason, then like that's the time when I will take free things.
That's a good example. Thunder gave me a laser for one video, which is great. It's a great machine. I have no problems with it. But I was trying to develop a relationship with them, and they basically ghosted me. So that's why I never show how I cut my leather bags anymore. In the beginning, I was trying to develop a relationship with them in good faith, showing their logo a lot and showing. Now, anytime I laser cut something, I don't show their logo because I'm developing a relationship with Aeon Laser because they see the value in an ongoing relationship. And my Aeon machine is coming in any minute. But I took the Thunder laser for the one video. Mark was like, they're not going to pay you. I was like, I'll take the machine because I can make 75 handbags on it, which is what I did. And those handbags are $500 each. I certainly made some really decent money with that. So Thunder, thank you for getting me jumped onto a decent quality laser. But I need a relationship with somebody.
Yes.
That's willing to get involved with my family and basically make me part of their family. And they could call on me. That's the one thing that drives me crazy is a lot of these companies literally drop the ball where they have me as somebody who's dying and willing to be a mouthpiece for their product. And they just completely disregard you.
That happens quite a bit for some reason.
Much more than you think. And I think a lot of it has to do with, like, in the beginning, there was such a huge excitement with influencers and people getting on board with this, like,
low... I think it's turnaround.
It's this low value, low bar entry to a whole new marketing scheme. So people were really excited. But then you say turnaround with the personnel at the companies.
Yeah.
That's true, too. That happens a lot in the TV business where everything's hot and heavy. And then they're like, this is Michelle. She's going to be your new account executive. And then you have your first meeting and they're like, so tell me about you. What do you do? I'm like, I have a contract for this many tens of thousands of dollars with your company.
So I have a big laser. I would never pay $13,000 for a laser myself. And this company gave me this laser to use in some videos. I'm like, okay, this is amazing. And you want to build that relationship because it seems like a huge investment for these companies. You know, I made my commitment, and then like a year or two later, I'm like, oh, I want to upgrade the software. They have new software, and I can't do it the normal route because of serial numbers and stuff like that. I tried to do it all online and it's like, it doesn't recognize my serial number or my machine. Jimmy was talking about this before we hit record. So I'm like emailing my contacts and like over months and multiple emails, nobody replied to me. So I can't get support on this huge machine. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I guess we don't have a relationship. So then I took another free laser recently, and it's just nice to be able to have somebody to talk to. I can send an email out and get an email back that day. It is crazy that I have this huge, huge machine that I would never buy, but it's absolutely an amazing piece of machine. But I can't get any support from it. I know, yeah. I could sell it. I could make a lot of money. I could buy.
Would they get support? That's a good question.
That's tough.
A lot of these digital, that's the, one of the things is a lot of these digital tools, CNCs and lasers, you can't get the software or you can't register it without
purchase.
Yeah, it's really weird. So they make them really hard to transfer ownership. I don't know why that is with some of these digital machines.
The reason this whole conversation came up is because I've reached out to a company online to buy a very expensive piece of equipment. And I said to their Instagram, I said, hey, I want to get a quote on a machine. And then they see my followers. Maybe they didn't know who I was, but they researched me. Now they know who I am. And they basically ghosted me. And I said, what's going on? I really want to quote on a machine. So eventually, through some series, this is over the last month, I finally got on the phone yesterday with the owner, 2 days ago, with the owner of the company. He called me, and then I called him back, and he's like, look, the conversation opened up like this. Look, we don't give away free stuff. I just can't afford it. That was what he assumed I was calling for. And I said, I want to buy the thing. I'll pay for it. I said, I have the money at this point in my career. I'm not asking for anything for free. And he went, oh, like you could hear him sigh for relief, like the conversation wasn't going to be him trying to let me down. And as the conversation progressed, he started to, and then he revealed what he knew about me. I thought he didn't know anything about me except for like my on-screen analytics. And then he realized, I watched this video, I watched that video. He goes, I love what you do. I think it would be a good fit if we work together. And I said, just give me a quote. And by the end of the conversation, he's like, look, I'll give you a good deal on a machine. I'm not going to make you pay full price. I say, great, that's fantastic. But I went into it full-heartedly thinking I was going to pay full price. And by the end of the conversation, we might have a deal. I think we have a deal. And basically just a handshake deal over the phone. They're not in this country, so it's can't meet him and shake his hand. But I'm going to end up with this new machine. By going into it willing to pay full price, I set a precedent of like, I don't want freebies, basically, is what I said to the guy. So I think we're off to a good foot. When the machine comes, everyone's going to see it and they're going to know what it is.
Yeah. I mean, there's the type of machine, I think, has a lot to do with it. Like that thing that you're talking about, and you told us the numbers and the situation and everything beforehand. Like, there's no way that a company like that goes and just gives away those machines. Like they don't send blast out an email that, you know, do you want our smart blinds or our this machine?
It's not an X-Carve. It's not an X-Carve.
So, you know, that's I think a really different beast. You have to pursue, if that's a type of thing that you really want to use in your work, you have to pursue them differently than you would just be like, hey, 3D printing company who makes, you know, $99 3D printers. Can I have one for free? Because to them, it doesn't cost anything. It's just free exposure for them to drop a machine. But that relationship, it's going to be like what we talked about before, where it's just they're not going to support you. They don't really want anything long term. You are just a way for them to get their machine in front of some people. The opposite, I think, can be true. When you start investing in a company and you either are willing to buy, like you were, or you actually have bought some machines, and then you say, hey, look, I really like what you all do. I've bought these things. Do we have a way that we can work together? That is another way to go about it, but that takes some investment on your end. Like me and Prusa, who makes 3D printers, I love their printers, and I have bought them. I bought many of them, and I would buy them every single time. When they come out with a new printer, I buy it. Now, they like me. I mean, they like my work, I guess, but I don't know if they like me, but they're really cool over there.
They like
and
you.
They also send me printers that I don't ask for because they know that I'm going to show their printers because I like them. And it's a natural thing. And so I have this weird mixture of like half of them I've paid for and half of them I haven't. And they just like occasionally show up. But that's a really good fit. I like the people. I like the product. I like how they go about making things for people. Way more than most other 3D printing companies. Like, I would not do that same type of thing. I would not have that same type of relationship with most other 3D printing companies because they're just not that company. You know what I mean? There's something different there. But when it comes to these other companies that make really, really expensive, unique tools, like this one that I'm vaguely talking about that's coming up for the Gia, I'm really excited about being able to use this tool. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if anybody else is going to be interested in it, but I'm really excited about giving it a shot. And so that was the reason for me for this one to be like, okay, let's go down the path and see if it's worthwhile.
Well, I talked about generally. You're saying sometimes you could jumpstart a relationship by buying the product. And I bought the Kubota. I bought it 99% because I needed it. There's so many times I enlisted people with this equipment to come and do services for me around the farm. And my buddy would leave me his tractor here to play with and use around the farm. But then I come out and it's gone because he needs it to go do a job. And I was like, you know what? I need one. There is a 2% chance that maybe they'll care that I own some of their equipment and I'll take it from there. But I committed. I bought the machine, some accessories, everything. And tagged them in a couple of posts. They ignored me. I met one of the key marketing people at the Vegas show that I went to. Everything seemed like it was okay. sent her an email with some of the examples of me using the machine, haven't heard a thing. So I'm just going to go make some magnetic stickers that say Duresta in Kubota orange and cover up their logo. Every time the machine's on camera, it's just going to be a Duresta machine. If they want to pay me to take the stickers off, then I have a bargaining point. But they don't care.
Like,
they don't care.
Yeah, it's just like you painting your tools way back in the day.
They don't care. And that's it. I thought I had developed a relationship. I thought I began what could become a relationship. It was really just a handshake and I heard about you. Oh, that's really cool. And I was like, hey, I bought this piece of equipment and I have these other accessories. Maybe if you want. The reason why I wasn't really eager to even try. First, I'll go back a little bit. I met Kubota online and the marketing person was really excited about me. And he says, this is like 7 years ago. He says, I'll bring you up in the meeting. And then he brought me up in the meeting. He's like, yeah, we're not doing it. You know, you don't have a big, I was like, okay, fine. So all these many years later, I never tried anything. But I see other people working with Kubota. And what they do is they get a piece of equipment for several months and then it goes back. And then they get a different piece of it. And those lag times in between getting a piece of equipment and dropping something off and getting to try. I mean, I felt that I would probably get lost in the mix. And it would be like, I get used to using a piece of equipment. They take it away and they'd be like, you know what? Let's not give them another piece. So then I'm in this weird purgatory. So I said, you know what? I got the money. I'll just buy a piece. If it turns into a relationship down the road, that's just gravy. In the meantime, I'm not banking on it. I'm not in some purgatory where I'm waiting for a new tractor to come because it's the new hot thing. I said to her when I met her, I said, I got the machine. If there's any accessories you guys want to show off, you want to let me play with some accessories or whatever. Or if you want to subsidize my tractor, that's great too. But there's nothing. So I just looked up the orange sticky paper that comes for my vinyl cutter.
I prefer to work with sponsorships. I prefer to work with companies that aren't tool companies or not woodworking related because I don't enjoy the obligation of showing off tools. Like, I love working with Squarespace because they don't care what the video is about. I know people get sick of it, but I get to keep making videos because I get to keep working with Squarespace, and they just care about their 60 seconds and I get to do whatever I want. Now, I have taken my share of free tools, but generally I have a no logo in the shop rule. And because I'm like, because you get tired of the comments of like, oh, you were given that tool. And so I've covered up or removed logos. And I got a comment recently saying, oh, you covered up the Festool logo, so they'll pay you to put the logo back on there. I'm like, I can't win.
Yeah.
Just say exactly.
Say, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Exactly.
And my Festool miter saw broke down like a couple of years ago. The motor burned out. I had to send it in to get it repaired. And I took all the logos off. And when I got it back, all the stickers were back on there, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah.
Oh, so they were like, this one's defective. Let's fix it for it.
Yeah, that's funny.
But I did a video 2 years ago, and it's a shop tour video. And I go, I tally up all the tools I paid for. And I tally up all the tools that were given to me. And I really, really thought it was going to be way more paid for. And I was a little surprised and kind of embarrassed by the end result. But it was mostly because of that $13,000 laser.
Yeah, I was going to say the ones that you've taken, reason that you took them is so you didn't have to pay for them. And that,
But it was, hopefully it doesn't sound like I'm whining about where I'm at and all the stuff I've given, because I probably wouldn't be, I definitely wouldn't be here if it wasn't early on of like getting that X carve machine. And I bought my first saw stop table, but then they reached out to me like, hey, you use a saw stop. Would you want a bigger table? I'm like, of course I want a bigger table. And it kind of built up and snowballed over the years, and I'm where I'm at because of working with these companies, and I'm not whining about free tools. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not whining about it either. It's just a double-edged sword, and the people that are either on their way up or just starting, just be aware of all the options and don't jump on everything that comes your way, especially those Temu things and all that other here's my Amazon store stuff. Just stay away from all that. Because then you get yourself into these obligations and then you feel dirty when you're showing off a hair curler and you don't even have long hair.
There's almost like three tiers of tool companies. There's the one tool company that just does the blanket email, sends out to everybody, like, you know, play with our $100 laser engraver. Then there's the tool companies. I don't want to mention any names, but you have a direct relationship with them. They're not so huge that you have a direct relationship with them, which are fun to work with because you deal with the top people there and you get to know them. And then there are the DeWalt's, the Milwaukee's. You don't deal with those companies directly.
They're like Intex, with their agencies. With no souls.
Yeah.
Those companies.
Yeah. I did something with DeWalt way back when I was at the other house. And you never talk to anybody from DeWalt directly. You talk with their ad agency or the marketing agency. Mm-hmm. And you'll never develop a relationship with them because you don't get to know the people.
Did I tell you guys my funny Milwaukee story? I could care less about Milwaukee, so I'll tell the story straight up.
Sure. That's why we're here, is for the stories.
So we did the TV show, and one of the producers is like, hey, what tools do you want? And I go, I don't care. It doesn't matter. I go, they're all the same. He's like, oh, okay, great. We did a deal with Milwaukee. I'm like, all right, whatever. So Milwaukee sent over a ton of stuff. They ended up on my Netflix show, the show that I did with the guys, and it's all Milwaukee stuff. Which is great. Which is why I have Milwaukee tools. I didn't buy any of it. It was all given to the TV show. The TV show went out, and then everybody got the flotsam and jetsam that was left over. And we all took a set of tools and toolboxes and stuff. But toward the end, one of the guys on the show is like, hey, the marketing girl at Milwaukee wants to talk to you. This is before the show was just about to end. I was like, oh, great. So I get on a Zoom call with this young woman. And she's like, hey, the show seems so exciting. We're really excited to see when it comes out. And we're really proud that we're on the show. I was like, oh, that's cool. And she's like, what does a deal with Jimmy DiResta look like? I go, I don't know, $100,000 a year and Frontier Free Tools. I said, something like that. And, you know, I said, if the tools are in my shop, they'll be in every video. She goes, oh.
She's like, okay, bye.
We don't pay anybody. The owners of our company think it's unethical to pay somebody. I go,
what?
Okay, you're paying people with free tools because you know that they would take free tools. That's a pay. Well, we just think it's unethical to pay people to advertise. I was like, do you pay for trades, for pages and trades and stuff like that? They're like, yeah, we do. I go, and by the way, I looked at your YouTube channel. You have these actors. You're paying them to. I go, what is this? No difference than. I go, I can't pay my mortgage with free tools. She's like, yeah, it's just the thing from above me. I can't change it. I was like, all right, it was nice to meet you. I'll see you later. We were on the phone for 10 minutes.
What deal was she expecting there to be if they... That doesn't even make any sense. Like, what was she expecting?
From my mouth to God's ears, that's the truth. I told her what I said, and she's like, yeah, we don't pay anybody. Just so you know, we don't pay. I go, so everybody I see online with Milwaukee Tools, they just got the tools and no pay. I can't believe that because there were some really heavy hitters out there with Milwaukee stuff, and I don't think they would just take free tools. So I just said, okay. I said, I guess this conversation's over. Have a nice day. And I got off the phone with them, and I went right to Instagram, and I blocked them because I don't want Milwaukee tagging me in clips from the TV show. It was before the TV show was out, so we didn't know what kind of hit or non-hit it would be. So I didn't want them being like, oh, here's Jimmy DiResta using our tools on Netflix. Yeah. So... Huh. They're in the pile of block tool companies. There's a few there.
One of the things that I learned, and Bob kind of mentioned it earlier, is if you're out there making videos and these companies give you a contract, that contract is not the end. It is not solid. It is not written in stone. You can have it changed. Recently, a company wanted to send a contract, and I said, I can't. I don't want to. Let's do a handshake, and they're like, "Okay, we'll do that." And I got a handshake deal, which is, I don't want there to be contracts because there's always it has to go through the agent, then the lawyers
This makes it more complicated.
Yeah, let's just do a handshake. But what I learned early on is everything is negotiable. Nothing is set in stone, and that first offer that you're given, whether it's money or exposure or whatever, it's all negotiables.
And that is the thing in their best interest. That's what they give you first.
It's not in both parties' best interest. Yes.
Right.
So that's why also too, and you'll notice in a lot of videos, I'll intentionally grab a Milwaukee and I'll intentionally grab a DeWalt in the same few minutes.
Throw it on the ground.
In the same few minutes, yeah, of course. But in the same few minutes, I'll grab those different brands so people know that I'm not loyal to any one brand. That being said, like the... if Milwaukee comes along and wants to pay me, I will unblock them. So if anybody knows.
Everything has a price. Have you seen like the Milwaukee and DeWalt drills where they're connected to each other and they turn it on and let them fight?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I think in this just general thing to people, what I wanted to say to people that are just getting started, who are starting to make content and they're starting to get those offers from, you know, laser companies or lip gloss companies or whatever, just be careful about taking free stuff because it's free. There is a trade-off for everything you take. There's an expectation on the other end. Obviously, there should be. There's an expectation on the other end by the person who's giving you the thing. And if you get a contract, make sure that you actually understand what is in that contract. It is not a good thing or a bad thing to take free stuff. But I think you need to be really careful not to just be, to look past potential difficulty because it's free, you know, and be like, oh, yay, I got a free laser engraver. But will that actually make your business do better? Will that give you opportunities? Will that grow something for you? Or is it just giving you a chance to show off somebody else's stuff one time? Because that's probably not worthwhile.
This is the perfect use case for AI. You give in a contract, upload it to one of the AI, ChatGPT or Claude or whatever, it will summarize the contract for you and put it into words that you can understand. It is great for that stuff.
You know, my contract advice, I tell everybody, look for two things. How much you're getting paid and when it's due. And if that works, sign it. Don't read anything else. None of it matters.
Do not listen to Jimmy. Don't listen to Jimmy.
Everything matters.
You have to have an end date. There has to be a termination.
Yes.
End of contract.
The relationship always ends before the contract ends. You stop talking to each other before the contract ends. It always happens.
So he's probably not joking, but he should be joking because there are so many other things in a contract that can be very dangerous for you if you don't at least know that they're there.
None of it matters.
How long they last? What happens? This is a big one. What happens if the company feels like you did not keep your end of the bargain up?
So you just delete their email and block them.
I've had contracts in the past that say if you don't make enough money, then you have to cover the cost of the tool, then you have to pay a percentage of the tool cost back every month until that money is made.
Well, some people want recoup. If there's
want recoup, yeah. And there needs to be a limit on that for the total value. There needs to be a limit for time. And this stuff sounds confusing, but I am not a lawyer. I don't like reading contracts. I don't understand all the stuff. I have somebody that helps me with it. But your suggestion, David, of having something summarize that for you is excellent. That is super smart. And I have not thought of that. So I'm glad to know that. But something like that can help. Or if you have a friend who just has more experience with it, whether they're a lawyer or not, knowing what to look for. Just don't just be, you know, look past the fact that it's free and just ignore the other stuff that comes with free stuff. Nothing is truly free, I don't think. So, except for love. Love is
Wouldn't it be funny if what I just said ended up in ChatGPT, like in the Flotsam and Jetsam, which I used twice this show, I know, because I just saw the word written, in ChatGPT, and then somebody puts that contract through and it just says, like, you're getting paid and it's due here. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
It's literally ChatGPT takes possession of my advice.
That is a real possibility.
That is the world we are navigating right now.
Yes. All right. Any other thoughts on this? Free stuff?
Everything is also like Dave said, everything's negotiable. You gotta just go into it, and if it feels right, go for it. If it feels like one of the most giantest corporations in the world says, "Oh, we only give out free tools because we feel it's unethical to pay people," get off the call.
Yeah,
it's okay to take free tools as payment if the situation is right. Because I did it, and look where I'm at now.
I'll tell you, this is another one more story, because now I'm starting to get heated about remembering stuff. I felt cheated because they gave us all those tools and then it was on the Netflix show. So I felt cheated. Like, I felt like I was taken, because I don't know if it was intentional, but it felt that way. I'm like, I just got you on Netflix and you say you don't pay anybody? Like, that was what I was thinking, right?
Yeah.
The show was done. Same thing happened with Crescent Tool, which I will throw under the bus, which is why every one of my Crescent Tools have their logo ground off. I got approached by some marketing company called Fire, I think is what they call. Fire Festival is what I like to call it. Company called Fire reached out to me. Oh, we represent Crescent Tool, blah, 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 blah. This was all leading up to the TV show. That was when I was popular. And Crescent said, well, the Fire agency, whatever they're called, said, we made an agreement. We actually had a full agreement in email. They were going to pay me $30,000 and give me all the Crescent tools. And when I said, the show's shooting, if you guys want to send stuff, they sent over 6 tool bags for everybody on the cast. Everybody got a big Crescent tool bag. So all the hand tools in the show are Crescent. This big giant toolbox showed up. And it's one of the big toolboxes I use. They sent me this. As soon as the show was over, and again, I don't think the timing was malicious. It just seems suspect because they didn't know. Mark goes, can you believe this BS? And he sends me, and it's like, yeah, we've decided to go in another direction. And I wrote a really long scathing email to my contact at Fire. And she's like, and then her supervisor wrote back to me and said, I don't know why you think you were promised anything. We didn't promise you anything. Because I said, you guys sent me all this stuff you got on the Netflix show. This is going to be published in a year. And now you pull the rug out from under me with this bait and switch. She's like, we didn't bait and switch you. Nobody promised you anything. So I went back and I grabbed all the screen grabs of the actual contract points before there was a contract. I said, this is why I assumed I was getting paid, because you said you were going to pay me and this is the email.
Mm-hmm.
And she never wrote back. And so all the free Crescent tools I have, I ground their name off of them and covered up the logos for, there's some like mechanic tool company they represent. It's at Home Depot. It's like a black with an orange logo. It's like mechanic shop or something. I forget the name of it. But they sent me all these tools, and thanks for the tools, but I really wanted to pay. So don't buy Crescent tools.
I don't think I have any bad relationships or super bad experiences with any tools. There's no company that I won't have in the shop.
Those are the only two, and I just feel like I was bait. And you said it earlier in the conversation, Dave, it's about personnel. Because I think I made a deal with somebody that moved on.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, because there was several different people in all the emails, and then all of a sudden the person's like, who's this guy? We don't have a deal with him. Why does he think we have a deal with him? But they should have got their ducks in a row before they should have also acknowledged the fact that they did make an agreement with me and then told Mark, we don't have an agreement. I don't know why you think we have an agreement, because it was obviously a series of emails. But I could have just taken it in stride and not gotten offended and be like, whatever. But I got offended. And then the same thing with Milwaukee. I could have taken it in stride, not got offended, but I got offended. So it wasn't like they duped me. I just thought it was underhanded and not responsible on that part. That's it. I have another story. I'm kidding.
Who's this podcast sponsored by?
Oh, this podcast is sponsored by the Patreon supporters.
Good transition.
Not a tool manufacturer.
Before I come up with another story.
Big thanks to everybody over at Patreon that lets us get together and talk and do this show. We are really grateful, especially the top supporters. And we want to give them a shout out because they pay us. I mean, all of them pay us, but all the Patreon people pay us. Big thanks to the top supporters that go above and beyond, you know, and they really do make a big difference. That is Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods. You ever have a time when you do something from muscle memory and then in the middle of doing it, you realize that you don't know what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
I just had that. I don't remember reading. I'm not done with the list, but I realized halfway through the list that I did not remember reading those names. That's super weird. Anyway, okay, let me jump back. Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott, a Daddy Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, OMG Made, and A Pretty Big Deal. But also people like, I didn't pull the list up. Oh, let's see. Skull Forge Studios. I forgot to pull the list up of other people. we're grateful for everybody and all the support at every level.
Thank you.
They all get the after show. We had some weird stuff with the after show, like the podcast feed was acting weird last week for some people, and we had one of the episodes had the wrong number on it, and I apologize. But it should be good, and if you don't have that feed, you can go to Patreon, log in, the feed, RSS feed will be right there. You can copy it and put it in your podcast player. You can also watch the video after show on YouTube. That link is in the show notes on Patreon. You can watch the regular show there as well. But that stuff is all there for people. If you want to get the after show, you just want to support what we do, you can go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level. We would be very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
That is it. I've got a couple to recommend this week. What do you guys have?
I just sent you guys a link for Torben Armand. I hope I say his name right. We've talked in the past a couple times just about behind the scenes stuff, and he's an amazing blacksmith. He's a super skilled. And this week I made a fire basket, and a couple people told me about the fire basket that he made, which is 50 times more elaborate and more accurately done as far as blacksmithing goes, because he's a proper blacksmith. I'm just a hack with an anvil and a hammer. So I just want to give him his props. And so somebody posted the link, and I just said, he's my hero and my teacher. So shout out to Torben. Like I said, we've talked in the past. He might be in Sweden or Denmark.
And Torben, if you're listening, there are different accents of or letters in your name that I don't know how to type. So I'm not going to be putting them in the show notes. And I apologize for that. But I'm just telling you that I don't know how to do it. So. All right, David, what'd you get?
I'm going with Chris Piesek. Maybe I'm saying that right. He's a illustrator. He does a lot of drawings with words and just a. I really like his style.
Really beautiful.
I think I was playing on the iPad a couple weeks ago, and I was like, "Man, I need to get better at drawing letters and words." And I looked something up, and he's one of the first ones that came up, and I'm like. He is really good. He's a professional illustrator, and he has great tutorials. I have Procreate, and I've been using that. And he has Procreate tutorials, but he also uses Adobe Fresco, I believe it's called. And I have an Adobe subscription, but I've never used Fresco, so I've been playing around.
I'm gonna try Fresco.
Yeah.
You know what? You talked years ago or months ago, maybe a year ago, about. The Adobe Shape Creator, is that what it's called? That one tool?
An Illustrator, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the other day, John Kruphoff showed me how to use it, and it is an amazing tool.
That's a game changer, yeah. It's a game changer, although it's been there probably for 15 years.
Yeah, but I always go the long way around to create shapes, but now I'm going to definitely use that. John gave me a 2-second tutorial, and I was like, I remember Dave mentioned this years ago, and it's really amazing. So if you do, look up the Shape Creator video. There must be one online.
So I have a couple. One is, actually, they're both things that just came across my feed that I don't really know anything about. One is a guy named James Hill. He plays ukulele. And I've heard a lot of ukulele in the past, and it's never done a whole lot for me. Like, it's just not that interesting of an instrument. But he plays, this video came up, and it's him playing Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix, which is, like, one of my all-time favorite songs ever. Yeah. And it is unreal. On a ukulele with distortion, it's awesome. And it's him singing and just like rocking out to the, it's crazy. So, and then I sent that to my brother because we always send music back and forth. And then he sent me a video back from a long time ago of this same guy playing the Super Mario Brothers theme song on a ukulele. And it's awesome as well. So just go check out James Hill. And then the other thing, just came up last night. We were sitting down in front of the TV, and it's a full jungle cabin build in 28 minutes by somebody named Sasha Juilliard, I think. This guy decided to build a cabin on the side of a mountain in Costa Rica and in the middle of like the woods. And it's really high up. And it's just him walking through the construction process over, I think it took him 3 months to do. And he has, you know, some friends or some people he hired that help with all the different parts. But, you know, he puts posts in the ground. It's all steel frame construction with giant, half of it is glass facing the ocean. It looks really nice. It's all wood and black steel and glass. And it's interesting to see somebody who you can tell like probably has a little experience with design, but not necessarily with building, but he ends up making a really beautiful home in a beautiful place. And it's just interesting to see the entire process start to finish. So, yeah, go check those out. Mm-hmm. You guys got anything else for this week?
I have another story with somebody.
Another story. You're probably not kidding. We'll talk about it in the after show. Oh, man.
I'm done.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Love you.
We'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Bye. Love you.